I'm loving this. Yes, yes, yes.
All right, welcome to this edition of Morgan the Ask Ford podcast. Tuesday night, March 28th, about 9 o'clock, watching actually Omaha Blues in the game right now, McDonald's All-American. I've seen him have a couple buckets and, you know, talking about him going to Iowa State and everything. So anytime, and he's an Iowa kid, so that's the next thing is it's always good to have an Iowa kid playing, and then even more important, staying home, going to Iowa State, and going to be a Cyclone for TJ. I want to welcome in Zach again, talking about basketball, and then obviously Trevor as well. You know, we were just talking before we hit record here, different start to the podcast, but I do think the number one thing to talk about in the state of Iowa right now is the Iowa women's basketball team making the Final Four, and then Caitlin Clark, you know, just great individual performance by Caitlin Clark, 40-point triple-double, and they will play South Carolina at, I believe, 8 o'clock Central Time on Friday night on ESPN in the Final Four, first time in 30 years, since 1993. I do vaguely remember that. I was obviously 13 years old. I do remember watching that game with Vivian Stringer as their coach and them getting beaten that in the Final Four. Zach, let's go with you. Obviously, thanks for coming back. What are your thoughts on the Iowa women? You know, just real quick, minute thought or whatever on the Final Four.
Yeah, you know, it's extremely exciting for, you know, the state of Iowa. Obviously, Caitlin Clark's something special. I mean, she's getting tweeted out by everybody in the world. I mean, I think right now she's probably the hottest athlete going. And she probably is the National Player of the Year. And I think, you know, you're setting up here against the Boston girl from South Carolina to, you know, for all the marbles here. This game probably, from everything I've said, will probably be the most watched girls basketball game in the history of college basketball.
You just hit every, like, little check mark I had on my list here of things to talk about in 5 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be electric. I mean, I think, you know, everyone in Iowa obviously says Caitlin Clark this, Caitlin Clark that. She should be the National Player of the Year. But Aaliyah Boston obviously is the reigning champion. And, I mean, I think we need to get to it later. Does Caitlin Clark need to win this game to actually prove that she is the best player in the country? I mean, her stats are going to say it, but the wins are another thing. But we can hit that later.
All right. Trevor, your thoughts on just, you know, quick minute here or so on the Iowa women.
I want to do a deeper dive in Iowa women after I go here real quick, just to get your thoughts, yep. But want to talk about some keys to the game. What Zach said, you know, reading an article that Keith Murphy posted, Iowa versus Louisville was up 82% in ratings on ESPN over the Texas game last year. So to Zach's point, it shows you what Caitlin Clark brings to the table, Van Lith for Louisville does. Seems like women's basketball is growing, at least this year. I don't know if it's going to continue in the coming years, but it seems like it's a trend that's maybe here to stay, especially when you got these teams that have all these different dynamic players. Boston for South Carolina, she's a big gal. Caitlin Clark does it all. Van Lip was a good scorer. LSU's got their players. So there's a lot of storylines in the women's game, which is somewhat surprising to say. I, you know, 10 years ago, I would have never thought I'd be excited about women's basketball.
Oh, I'm the exact same. You know, when I was at Iowa State, the men and women both won the conference regular season and the conference championship. I think it was 2001. And, you know, they had a big party and everything. It was awesome. But it was women's basketball is still nothing like it is today. Every game that they're putting up right now is the most watched game or whatever. Now, I think some of that is the games are on ESPN, not ESPN2, not ESPN3, or not on ESPN+ like they've been in the past. And some of the games have actually been on ABC. I think the Iowa State-Georgia game was on ABC. And obviously when you put it on, you know, ABC compared to ESPN, you're going to get more people because more people have access to it. And if it's on ESPN, there's more access to, than ESPN2. So whether it's the NCAA or ESPN, whoever's deciding to put the games on the bigger platforms means more eyeballs and more excitement. All right, now here's my little deep dive, and I know I just Zach hit most of it, but Caitlin Clark's celebrity is, I believe right now, she might be the biggest basketball player in the country. Not women's basketball player, not college basketball player, but basketball player celebrity right now. Every, like Zach said, everybody's tweeting out things about her. Magic Johnson, Luke Combs said something because it came out that she listens to him warming up and invited her to do something. What she is doing right now is unbelievable, and she's probably the biggest basketball celebrity right now. I would say it's her and Charles Barkley. Charles Barkley, all obviously with his takes and everything he does, and then being on 60 Minutes on Sunday and everything, is on fire as well. And you can't watch the basketball without seeing two or three of his commercials. But I think those two right now are the two biggest basketball celebrities in the country. Zach?
Yeah, you know, Caitlin Clark is, I mean, I think John Cena just tweeted out to her as well, which, I mean, we're going into the WWE world here. She's definitely the hottest commodity in basketball right now. I mean, now, will that keep going? We don't know. But, you know, I think she's going to make for unprecedented numbers come, you know, Friday night. So she's fun to watch. And, you know, just to the point on the girls game, I also, you know, we've talked about it. Some of these girls are going to stick around a lot longer than on the men's side. Those men's, you know, they're a freshman and they got all the talent in the world. They're gone. They're going to go to the NBA because, you know, they're going to make the money. I was looking at, by the, I think the highest paid WNBA player makes like $256,000. So I guarantee you Caitlin Clark's making more than that.
Yeah. And that's a great point to be made. And there are some players like Baycott from North Carolina is making a lot of money at North Carolina. He's staying year after year after year because the NBA is not conducive to his game. Kind of like Luka Garza, big post, back to the basket, not a huge three-point shooter. They can make several hundred thousand dollars a year where they're going to be in the G League. You know, they might get a $1 million contract, but they can make just as much money in college. And I do think Caitlin Clark is making way more money at Iowa and will. She could come back for two more years. She has a COVID year plus her senior year. And if I'm the WNBA, I'm trying to figure out a way to get her to the NBA as quickly as possible. And the only way that is going to be money. And I don't know how they do that. But I agree. That is a huge plus in the women's game is they aren't one and done. You know, they were saying, I was watching this, Omaha Ballou hit a three-pointer, and they said, if he can consistently hit that shot next year at Iowa State, he's one and done, and he'll be a lottery pick. He's 6'8", big, strong. He's a 3-and-D guy if he can hit the three.
Yeah, you guys said it right. Yeah. I mean, Caitlin Clark could come back for two more years, potentially. It's going to take a big-time money offer to get her to leave. I think she's already kind of hinted that she wants to come back for at least one more year, if not two, potentially. So she's definitely making her fair share of money in the women's side. I know we'll get into this men's side later, but the NIL money, the extra years, we kind of spoke on it last year, but it's almost making college basketball more interesting again.
Yeah, interesting in a different way. It's not because the teams are better and everything, but it's, you know, the movement and just how everybody's constructed and everything is very interesting. And yeah, we will hit that here in a little bit when we talk about the men's tournament. Let's get kind of back to Zach's point. Iowa's chances to win the basketball game and then the player of the year. And this is a, you know, you can argue this with the Heisman Trophy and all this. Is it the best player? It's supposed to be the most valuable player, but all these awards are centrally are for the Heisman Trophy. It's the quarterback on the best team. And for this, it's the best player on the best team. Well, I don't think there's much argument right now that the best team is South Carolina. It was last year. It is this year. Now, this tournament, this basketball tournament, does not find the best overall team. And we're seeing that in the men's for sure. But women, a little bit more difficult. But this tournament does not find the best team. It finds the winner of the tournament. And, you know, what are Iowa's chances? Zach, you're the basketball guy here. And no, I don't think she does have to win this game, but I would like to see her go off and score 35 points, have a double-double at least, and be getting close to a triple-double. And then Aaliyah Boston having her 15 points, 10 rebounds, just her every day, and see the difference in the dynamic of the two players.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, quite a game. You got two way different type of players. I mean, Caitlin Clark's flashy and can do it all, and she's going to have to. I mean, she's going to have to put up a triple-double, probably 30 points. And Boston's probably going to, like you said, have 15 and 15 or something. Nothing crazy, but again, she's the best player on the best team. I do think Caitlin Clark's probably the best player and the most valuable player this year. I mean, it's almost impossible to argue, but just looking at the spread, I think it opened at 11.5, or that's where I got it at. I actually bet on Iowa money line and the spread. I just feel like, obviously, I'm betting with my heart on that one, but that seems like a lot of points to give Iowa. But they're going to have to shoot it well, which they have. But I think they're going to see a defense like they haven't seen all year, and they're just going to overpower. They're so physical, and if Iowa can't shoot it, it could be a long night. But if they shoot it well, I think we're in for a instant classic.
Yeah, because, you know, they're going to be able to take Sununu away, the best. You know, they've got a great team to be able to do that. So Clark's going to have to get her. She's going to have to score 30, 40 points, I think, for Iowa to win this basketball game.
Well, a few things I have written down. And I wanted to ask Zach this, and Morgan, I'll get your opinion too. And I'll break it into kind of two halves here. But Zach probably watched the Maryland game versus South Carolina. First of all, I thought Maryland had three pretty good quarters versus South Carolina. Again, you're going against an undefeated team, but they had one terrible quarter. They got outscored 23-9 in the second. If you're Iowa, first of all, you can't have any terrible quarters. If you lose a quarter by 4 or 6 points, that's fine. You can live with that. You're still in the game. I think the second thing for Iowa is 3 to 4 girls have to be a problem. If it's just Caitlin Clark and one other, that's not going to be enough. We're going to need 3 to 4 girls playing, you know, an A game, which is tough to do in, you know, any given game. But again, you're trying to take down a Goliath here. And then an underrated player that I'm kind of looking at, can Molly Davis come off the bench in her limited time and provide 2 or 3 big plays?
Yeah, I think the bench is key. I mean, what was it, the Georgia game? They had no bench. And that was probably that's probably the toughest, really the toughest game we've had, and they got nothing off the bench. But, yeah, I think you're going to have some girls. You know, Gabby Marshall's
going to have she's going to have to hit some threes.
Yeah, 5 or 6 open threes, but it'll all run through Caitlin. But Caitlin's so good that she's going to get people open looks, and it's going to be, can they knock them down? Can we shoot, 40, 50% from the 3-point line and then limit them offensively and maybe get them in some foul trouble?
Yeah. And then just the last little half of that, I just had some numbers written down, and these are, you can argue these either way. I think Iowa needs to hit about 14 3-pointers or more, or about 1 3-pointer every about 2.5 minutes. First of all, to stay in the game. Second of all, to keep the momentum on Iowa's side. Iowa averages about a little over 12 turnovers a game. Try to keep it down to 3 turnovers max per quarter. Don't get killed in any quarter. Iowa averages about 2.2 blocks a game. Can we get to 3 or 4 somehow, which is going to be tough given their size? But can we still possession there? 80%+ on free throws. And then my final point would be within 10 points with about 6 minutes left, because Iowa's got the shooters that's not an impossible lead to come back from there at the end of the game. But don't be down 20. Keep it within single digits or 10 at most with about 5 or 6 minutes left.
Yeah, I think if you can keep it close, I would have to go back. I'll be the first to say I've not watched a ton of South Carolina. Obviously, that when they're on, I'll watch a few minutes. But I would guess they haven't had too many close games. So if you can keep it close and hit a shot to get it within 2-3 points with – 4 minutes left, the nerves set in. Iowa's been in some close games. That Georgia game was close till right at the end. Who can make the shots? I like my chances with Caitlin Clark in a close game down the stretch.
Yeah, and I think that would put all the pressure in the world is going to be on South Carolina if that game's you know, within 4 or 5 points going into the last 5 minutes. Not saying they won't handle it, but there's a lot of pressure on them if they can keep that game close. And I don't know, I almost feel like the higher scoring game is going to favor Iowa. I think South Carolina wants to be physical and rugged and probably try to keep Iowa under 70, 75, and Iowa would like to drop 90 on them, which that's going to be difficult. But yeah, I don't know what – I think South Carolina had one – I think maybe they went into overtime with Ole Miss or something. Other than that, it's been pretty fairly easy for them this year. So they were able to escape that one. I'm sure they beat LSU, obviously. I'm not sure what that score was, but obviously that would have been a tough test, I would think, for them.
Yeah, I mean, Ole Miss, you know, LSU, Georgia, you know, they played some teams that are obviously good. The Southeast Conference is always good at basketball. All right, so I want a prediction and a score, Zach, of the game.
I'm going to say South Carolina is going to win by probably 75-68.
So they hold Iowa down on their defense.
That's my prediction. I hope I'm wrong, but that's what I'm rolling with.
Okay, Trev.
Sort of similar. I had South Carolina 73, Iowa 64. Again, I think we're going to have 3 or 4 girls go off making a bunch of shots here, given their size differential. But, yep, Molly Davis. Pay attention to Molly Davis. She's my sneaky player of the game. That she won't be, but she could have a big impact for 2, 3, 4 big buckets.
All right. I'm going to be the contrarian here, and I'm going to actually pick the Hawks. I think Caitlin Clark shines in this moment. This is what she lives for. This is what she dreams about. And she's going to get help from Gabby Marshall and Warnock. Warnock's going to come through. And they're going to win 88-81. So I got the higher scoring game, and I think Zach was right. If the game gets in the high 80s, if Iowa could hit 90, I like Iowa's chances a lot. But I don't know if they can, but 88-81 Hawks. You don't hear me picking the Hawks very often, but I will in this situation.
I agree with you guys. The higher scoring it goes, the better chance it favors Iowa. And if Morgan, if Iowa wins, I'll buy you a drink next time I see you.
All right. Now let's go. Anything else you guys want to talk about Iowa or Caitlin Clark that you want to talk about real quick before we move on?
I just say, you know, I'll be honest. I haven't probably been excited for a college girls basketball game in my life. So this is probably the first time I'm actually, you know, excited to watch a game on Friday. Not that I haven't watched them and enjoyed it, but it's not like I've had it marked down on my calendar. I'm actually excited for this one. This will be a heck of a game.
Yeah, I mean, no matter what you're doing on Friday night, you're at a bar, you're at someone's house playing cards or something, that game's going to be on, and that can't always be said. You're going to make a point to watch this game, and I'm the same way.
I'll piggyback off what Zach said there. When Iowa played Louisville and Colorado, I was about sick to my stomach during the game. I haven't felt something like that in sports in a while, so it's got me hooked.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, now let's go, you know, continuing our weird focus on tonight's podcast, but I do think it's necessary, is the Iowa State women today with their 5th transfer. I think the first three, I think they all kind of said they weren't coming back. Morgan Cain, she kind of said she was done with basketball, but I think she kind of had a change of heart and is going to transfer. I think she's going to go a level down a little bit, wants to play a little bit more. And, you know, just, you know, she's not necessarily Iowa State's super fit. You know, they're up and down, run and gun, shoot it. And that's not necessarily her game. So I don't think that one was a surprise. Maggie Espen, Miller McGraw, has been battling injuries and just not a ton of playing time. You know, one more year left, go down a division and get all kinds of shots and go try to have fun with your last year at college. I don't think that's, you know, again, both role players. Morgan Cain started obviously when Stephanie Suarez got hurt, but definitely role players. And then Maggie Vick didn't play hardly at all. And so those three, I think you understand they want more playing time, not the right fit, whatever you want to call it. Now the last two, completely different. Lexi Donarski started every game she ever played at Iowa State, was McDonald's All-American, from, you know, has relationships with Matt Thomas and TJ Otzelberger from, she's from Wisconsin as well. And from everything that you'd ever heard, wanted to be at Iowa State, loved Iowa State. Something's changed, you know, didn't like her role on the team, didn't like what was going on. However you want to look at it, that's a bad look. And then today, Danae Fritz, who last year was hurt, redshirted, this year played a lot, started some games, didn't start every game, but was definitely 3 years of eligibility left and looking to be a bright part of the future of Iowa State. Excuse me, parents, Cyclones. She's from Tennessee, but both her parents, I believe, went to Iowa State and Cyclones through and through. And so that is concerning to say the least. And, you know, from what I've heard and been, you know, read and everything, it is not an NIL thing. The players have not asked for more money and they've said no. And it is, you know, they're not really saying a whole lot, but the year kind of fizzled out. It wasn't what this year should have been. Obviously, the Suarez injury was part of that. But this was supposed to be their year and get bounced in the first round by Toledo. So I think looking into it now, the culture was not good, I would assume. And people are out. And with the player movement and the player freedom, it's much easier to do that. They can all go somewhere and play right away. You're not stuck there, and it's just the reality. The transfer portal will giveth, as the men's team has benefited from, and it will taketh away as the men's team with Tyrese Hunter, and now the women's team is seeing that as well. So don't know what the future holds because it depends on who they get transfer portal in, but what do you guys think about that, especially Zach? I know you're more in tune to that, to Trev, but just give me a little bit of your thoughts here.
Yeah, I don't know the specifics on Iowa State, but I do know Bill Finley is a great coach, and I think it's a little overreaction. I think it's just the way college basketball is going to be anymore. I mean, Caleb Love just left North Carolina. I mean, it's just you're going to see people leaving left and right, but like you said, they're going to bring two or three in to replace that easily. And, you know, you got one of the top high school players in the country and the best player in the state coming there next year. So I wouldn't get too crazy about it. I just think everybody's got to get used to how this is going to work. I mean, people are going to leave left and right, but you're going to bring in new talent every year. And it's almost like NFL free agency or professional sports. You're going to have a whole different roster every single year. And it's just something we got to get used to.
Yeah, just a couple things. One, Iowa State does have the best recruiting class in school history coming in. You know, Audie Crooks is, you know, best player in Iowa, 6'3", you know, post player. They've got a Jackson girl from Des Moines Roosevelt. Her dad played football when I was there. I'm getting old. Cyclone through and through. And then they've got a McDonald's All-American from, I think, somewhere, Tennessee or Texas. There's a couple more recruits in Kansas, but it's a five-player class, best in school history. So they do have players to replace them, but you don't want to be playing five freshmen right away. Point guards coming back, you know, all-conference, first team a couple times. And I do think Brent Bloom and Chris Williams on their podcast said something about Lexi Donarski. You know, she has – obviously envisions playing in the WNBA. She's a 6-foot guard. And I think she's probably gotten some feedback that she needs to be a point guard to get to the next level. And Iowa State has a better point guard than her. And so she needs her role to be different. And, you know, you heard some whispers about her going to Iowa. Well, she wants to be a point guard. She's not going to Iowa. They got the best point guard in the world right now. So, I just don't see her going to Iowa, but it'd be interesting to see where they do end up. That's what I can always kind of find it a little bit interesting where they end up. Do they go higher or do they go to an even spot or do they go down? Always kind of interesting where they do end up.
Yeah, and you'll and
Go ahead, Zach.
And again, you'll bring in a couple. You know, you're worried about freshmen playing a lot of freshmen. But there'll be a you'll bring in a junior or senior or two that the heck probably an all conference player in the Big East or something. They're just all over now. So you just got to let it all shake out and then kind of evaluate after that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can, you know, Iowa State was not happy that Tyrese Hunter went to Texas or went up a level, whatever. But how do you think St. Bonaventure's felt? We got two of their players. They would have loved to have those guys back for another year. You know, so, you know, when you lose someone, you go try to get, you know, the player of the year in the Summit League or whatever, you know, try to go get that best player out of South Dakota State or something. And it's just the reality of basketball now. Trev, any thoughts or any ideas there?
Well, just like Zach said, it's kind of turned into free agency, like in professional sports where, and I think I heard a stat that 4 to 5 players is about the average for a college team now with the transfer portal. So yeah, I mean, it's a little alarming at first, you know, you're losing 5 players, but you're going to bring in, you know, 3 to 5 from, you know, Northwest Missouri State, Missouri, Nebraska, Minnesota, you and I mean, you're going to bring in players that are going to transfer around as well. So it's a new time. It's a little uneasy. We don't quite know what to expect, but I think it's all going to work itself out. As long as you're a good program, have a good coach, which Iowa State does, you'll survive it.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. They're not, I don't believe they're going to fall off and be, you know, bottom of the Big 12 or anything. Their expectation's still going to be NCAA tournament, home games in the tournament. You know, that's their expectation every year. And that's not going to change with this. It just might be a little blip in the road, and they might not be great right away. And we'll get to this when we talk about the men's tournament here, but you know, you might not play the best basketball in November, but as long as you're playing the best basketball in March, it'll be okay. All right, now let's move on to the Iowa State and Iowa women or men. You know, usually we go to the women second, but this time the men. For both teams, really, it's been quiet. Not a lot of transfers. Iowa State, you know, a transfer guy at the end of the bench, whatever. And essentially, they are just out there recruiting, trying to figure out who they want in the portal, who they need to replace, and trying to just get their teams as prepared as they can, you know, and gonna, you know, essentially you have to re-recruit your own players and then recruit those transfers and figure out who you want, who you have a chance at, who you can afford. I mean, the men's game, much more NIL involved. Who can you afford and who can you get? Zach, anything from the Iowa perspective, really Iowa State's just out, you know, kicking the tire on some guys and seeing who they have a chance at and who they think they can get.
Yeah, I mean, I know, obviously, Euless is leaving. Well, he's in the transfer portal, I should say. I don't know what that really means. Ngoulier or whatever his name is in there again, which doesn't surprise me. And I don't know. I saw there's a kid from Iowa City West that was a post player that is supposedly coming. Maybe he was at Belmont or something.
Yeah. He played with Patrick.
That's about all I've seen. I mean, obviously they're gonna look hard to get in there. I mean, they got some big pieces they need to replace, but I think a lot of it hinges on, is Chris Murray really ready to go to the NBA or not? I think he would probably get drafted in the first round just off of, you know, his abilities or potential abilities, but he struggled down the stretch and showed some. I mean, I think another year of college would not hurt him one bit.
No, that will be interesting because, you know, we all said that, you know, Chris and Keegan, you know, kind of both shied away a little bit when maybe the lights got the brightest. But, you know, Chris way more than Keegan, you know, kind of disappeared, especially at the end of the season here. I don't know, maybe he was hurt or whatever, but just he didn't look like the same player the last 3, 4, 5 games, in my opinion.
Yeah, I 100% agree, and that probably leaves a sour taste in his mouth as well. And you know, that's motivation as well. I mean, he, you know, until Iowa makes a run in the tournament, it's just kind of sour every year. I mean, it doesn't matter if we win the Big Ten tournament, we've got to figure out something to, you know, get to the Sweet 16, I think's kind of the minimum anymore that we need to get to, because everybody's kind of sick of anything else, either getting knocked in the first round or beating one team and going. And it just shows this day and age, just by looking at who's left in the tournament, there's no reason why Iowa couldn't make a run. I mean, anybody's doing it now. So it's just a matter of getting hot and being ready to, you know, being ready to play your best basketball once this tournament starts.
Yeah, like we talked about, we hit on it. Let's just go ahead and talk about the tournament. Final four, San Diego State versus Florida Atlantic, and then Miami versus UConn. Three brand new first-time Final Four participants in San Diego State, Florida Atlantic, and Miami. Obviously, UConn, blue blood. So here's some questions. How interested are you in this Final Four? Trevor.
I would say probably about a 7 out of 10. If it wasn't for Iowa women, it might be closer to an 8. The one thing I will say, though, Zach brought this up last episode. He said, you know, over the next 10 years, we might see some strange title winners. We might get one this year because three of the four teams haven't done it. And I kind of like that Florida Atlantic and San Diego State are playing each other, because one of them is going to be in the title game.
Right.
Versus most likely UConn. That's most people's picks, but right. It could be versus Miami. So I am interested. The second, or I don't know, not the second round, but whatever, the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight, the games weren't quite as good. Again, there was some questionable ref stuff that I'm sure we'll get into here in a little bit, but I am interested. I don't mind it. It's an outlier year, but as Zach said last week, this could become the norm over the next 10 years where we get some weird champions, and we might get one this year.
Absolutely. Zach, how interested are you in the Final Four?
Yeah, again, I'm extremely interested. I like this. Maybe if I was a fan of Kansas or something like that, I wouldn't like it, but you know, this gives opportunity to a lot of teams. You know, I'm really intrigued by San Diego State. They are like grown men out there. They're all, you know, we've talked about their age. I think their average age is like 23 years old. I think the other two teams on the other side are probably the two best. I thought Miami's looked great all year long. And then UConn just playing outstanding. So that should be a heck of a game. And I don't know what to think of Florida Atlantic. I keep betting against them and keep losing money. So I'm going to do it again and bet on San Diego State and probably lose that. But it's crazy, but it's fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Florida Atlantic's got the most wins. They're like 31-3. I mean, so they've just won all year. San Diego State, again, like you said, grown men out there. UConn, Iowa State played them in that PK Classic in the championship game. And there were a lot of people there that said they have everything it takes to win the national championship. And obviously that's coming to fruition there. And then Miami was, you know, won the ACC. I don't care. This is maybe a down year for the ACC, but, you know, anytime you can win that league, you're one of the best teams in the country, and they're proving it. And here's what's funny is Florida Atlantic just about lost to Memphis and had to make a big comeback in the first round. Drake had Miami down 8 with 5 minutes left. And you could probably say Drake should have won that game, ended on a 10-2 run for Miami. So it's just crazy how – now, that's nowhere saying Drake would be playing here, but it's just crazy how close some of the games are, and just one made shot or one more assist or one less turnover could change the entire outcome of the whole tournament.
Yeah, I've said it multiple times. We could redo this tournament over and over, and you're going to get – different team after different team, and I think that's what makes it so great. I mean, everybody, especially in age, I don't care your name, if it's North Carolina or Florida Atlantic, you got a shot to win the national title. Not a lot of sports can say that.
No, and that's the argument is this tournament does not find the best team. It does not. That's what makes it so great is, you know, Florida Atlantic. And those teams are not going to beat those teams very many times, but they just have to do it once on one day. You know, Fairleigh Dickinson is not going to beat Purdue more than 1 out of 20 times, but they did it in that 1 out of 20 when it mattered, and they did it. And, you know, I've heard some people talk about maybe trying to do the first couple games at home like the women do, well, that would ruin the whole thing, because you think FDU is going to go into Mackey Arena and beat Purdue? No way. But you get in a neutral floor where the tide kind of changes there a little bit and everything, and you know, you get those fans right in there for cheering for FDU, and then Purdue is whatever. So, Trev, what are your overall thoughts on the Final Four and everything?
Well, just one quick one. I think Marquise Noel for K-State, and I'll let you and Zach touch on this. I know we might run out of time, but
we're going to have to take a break here. Actually, let's do that right now, and then
let's talk about it right now.
Let's take a quick break here, and we'll be back with the second half here of Morgan, You Asked For podcast. Welcome back here to the second half of Morgan, You Asked For podcast. I'm Ryan with Trevor and Zach. Trevor, just continue your Marquise Noel talk and ideas.
Yeah, I don't know where we got cut off there, but Marquise Noel for Kansas State, obviously it was kind of sad to see him lose in the Elite Eight, even though it's cool to see a Cinderella move on. In my opinion, and I don't know how they do the player, the tournament, whatever, you and Zach can touch on that, but the game that he had versus Michigan State, that was probably the game of the tournament, in my opinion, so far. And he had one of the all-time great performances in March Madness history. Just a really likable player. Was hoping he'd move on. And he had a great game versus Florida Atlantic as well. So to see his run come to an end there in the Elite Eight kind of sucks. But can he be the player of the tournament, even though he lost in the Elite Eight? Or what's your guys' opinion on that? Because to me, he was the most entertaining player.
Yeah, I mean, I do think he can be. Will he be? No. It'll be one of the Final Four or one of the final game contestants. I think you have to get to that final game just because, you know, it's the most outstanding player of the tournament, and he just didn't play, play to the Final Four. And it's a little bit, but like you said, that 20 points and 19 assists is amazing. And he turned his ankle and hit a, you know, running, whatever you want to call it, three-pointer. And, you know, some of those finishes and three-point shots and everything. And then that next game against, you know, FAU there, they did a really good job on him and made it hard for him. He is only 5'7", 5'8", 5'9", whatever he is. He's small out there. They ran him off the three-point line and made him try to finish inside, and he was not able to do it. And that's why they were able to win that basketball game. And that's a great defensive job on FAU because, you know, you let him stand out there and shoot it, he's going to hit some. Now, he takes some crazy shots, and I think you have to live with that. But you get him inside, it's tough for him to finish, and you just make him finish over the top of seven-footers or even 6'8" guys. When you're a foot shorter than them, it's tough. I don't care how good you are.
Yeah, he, like Trevor said, that Michigan State game was probably, you know, one of the best that I watched. And I don't think he would be able to win the player of the tournament, but if they had like an all tournament team, I definitely think he's going to make it. I mean, he put his name, you know, people in the whole United States know his name now. And is he a senior? I don't even know how old that, I think he is a senior, isn't he?
Yeah. And he was one of the two players back. And, you know, that's what we're talking about, you know, the transfer portal and everything. Kansas State had two players now that coaching change and everything. And they were able to get to an Elite Eight, just a hair getting to the Final Four. So the portal makes it's amazing how quickly things can change and how you can go from not having much to having it all just so quickly.
Yeah, I thought that coach did an excellent job this year. And I don't know if you guys saw him go into the FAU locker room. I thought that was a class act, and went in there and said he was going to, you know, root for him. And he did a heck of a job this year. That's for sure.
Yeah, he will win some Coach of the Year awards, as he should. And he's a Scott Drew disciple, and Scott Drew's done that before. So, you know, obviously he's a faithful man, and faith's important to him, and does – and has said things and done things, and it's his way, and that's okay. And, you know, it worked this year for him. And you know, it made that game even more crazy is, you know, it was at Madison Square Garden. You know, Noel's from Harlem. You know, he's from New York. So that's even crazier. What are the odds of that?
Yeah, that was definitely a New York City point guard in there putting on a show.
Yeah, and they're flashy, and I mean, you know, and what makes what makes the NCAA tournament great is he going to be an all-star in the NBA? Is he even going to have an NBA career? I don't know. He's 5'7", 5'8". That's tough to get in the NBA and stick and everything. It's just reality of it. It sucks. I know I'm that height. But he made a name for himself, and he will always be remembered for that game.
Yeah, there were some people talking about, you know, could he make the NBA for maybe 2 or 3 years, be the last guy on the team at the end of the bench, potentially, just because of his work ethic and all that type of stuff. But, yeah, I mean, you know, at 5'8 or whatever, unfortunately, super good. But there is a size does matter.
Yep.
I'm rooting for him, though. I mean, I'm a fan of him after this tournament, big time.
Absolutely. I mean, he was good all year. I mean, obviously, I watched him many times throughout the year, obviously a couple times against Iowa State, and then just other Big 12 games wherever I would watch. And they were dynamic. And then, you know, the story that gets forgotten, and I know Zach and I, we talked about it when we were together this last weekend, that Johnson guy there, that is the kid that collapsed on the floor at Florida a couple years ago. I don't know how many of you guys remember that, but it was kind of a scary situation. Athletic heart is whatever it's called. It's nothing he did. It just kind of happens. Kind of like the DeMar Hamlin situation. It just kind of happens. And I don't think Florida ever cleared him to play. So he transferred, and obviously Kansas State cleared him, and he ended up and had a great year. And again, I don't know if those guys can come back. You know, they all say senior next to their name, but who knows? And I don't know the reality of their situations on playing more or not, but great to see him finish on a high note as well in basketball after the scary moment earlier in his career.
Yeah, he was a heck of a player, and it was good to see him, you know, get a play again, and you know, nothing happened. And like you said, we don't know if he's coming back or not. It's a different world we're in right now, and it's going to be a couple more years till we know a senior actually means a senior.
All right, now here's a couple questions for you guys. Who was in last year's Final Four? Can you name the four teams?
I think I can.
I could. This is one I was listening to some other people talk today, and they talked about this, but I think I could have as well. Trevor, why don't you give me two of them?
Kansas, Duke, North Carolina, UConn.
Okay, or all four. Yeah. Okay.
Or all four.
Yeah.
I saw it earlier, so I
yeah. No.
As you were saying, I written down. I don't know if I got all four, but I think I got three of the four, right?
You got it. And that's the thing. This year, you know, UConn, I would say, is a blue blood. But the other three are not at all. But last year it was the bluest of the blue bloods, and they were all blue as well. I mean, it was even worse. And this is the, if you are CBS, Turner, whatever, which is, that's a weird thing. Why are the games not on CBS? I think that's weird to me. That I understand, you know, when the first round or whatever, where there's physically, you can't have them all on a game on it. But now the games are on TBS or TNT or whatever. They're not even on CBS at all, and that's kind of weird to me. But they got to be looking at this, and I agree. We're excited for it. It's great to have. But if you're a TV executive, you are not happy, because this is not going to be, you know, TV people want the big names. They want the Yankees in the Super Bowl. They want the Giants in the Super Bowl. They want the Dodgers. They don't want Tampa Bay versus Milwaukee in the World Series. You know, they want the Cowboys in the Super Bowl. And it'll be interesting to see what the TV audience is for this game, this year's Final Four versus last year's, where last year's was the bluest of the blue bloods. This year, mostly new crop and not, you know, not big schools. That's the other thing. Miami's a private school. It's small. San Diego State, you know, Mountain West, obviously Florida Atlantic, small school, Southern Florida. And then obviously UConn is essentially ESPN's hometown. So, you know, ESPN is going to be all over UConn on this. But what do you think the TV numbers will be when compared to when it's all said and done?
I'm with you. I think it'll be down compared to last year. I think they would much rather see North Carolina versus Duke. And
some of that had to do with Coach K's last games. Correct. I mean, and that had something huge to do with last year's, and it was a great run. But yeah, finish your thought there, Zach.
But it's still March Madness, and it's still going to have millions and millions of views. But you know, last year's is going to be tough to beat. But I'll be interested to see how it shakes out. I want to see how it compares to, you know, the South Carolina Iowa girls game. To be honest, I just want to see all the numbers when it's all said and done.
Yeah, that would be. I'm with you. I think it's going to be close, and it may be more for the women's game. Especially if the first games, the Final Four games on TBS.
Yeah, I don't know. That was crazy to me. I was hunting around. I'm like, I got to be on CBS last week, and they're just hanging out on TNT and those channels. So I would assume they're on CBS, but
it does say CBS. I went and looked. It does say CBS for both of them on Saturday.
That'll help.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think the biggest thing for this Final Four, will the games be close? If the games are close, people are going to tune in. Now, how does that affect ratings? I don't know. But if these are blowout games, you know, if UConn puts it on Miami and, you know, the other game is, you know, not close, whoever wins, that's not going to help things.
Right.
We the men's side, Morgan, you brought up a good point. They need both of these games to be close ones, and that will build some anticipation for the championship game. If that happens to play out.
Right. And UConn has blown everybody out so far. So it could get ugly there. But I do think that's going to be the more anticipated game because, you know, Miami's, you know, a high dollar team, you know, kind of a botting team or whatever. And let's get to that Miami game. Zach, you're a coach and an official. What do you think of that last second call there against Creighton?
I don't think you make the call, but
I don't think you can either. Especially when the thing you want as a coach and even as an official, you want to be consistent. They didn't call that foul all game long. You could have called that same foul 50 times. How do you call it in that situation? And it wasn't, it wasn't like he got him on the arm or something. It truly affected the shot. Is it technically a foul? Probably, but is it called very often? No.
You just don't want the refs to be the topic of conversation after games. And that definitely was the case in that game. And it's unfortunate, but I'm not saying they still didn't deserve to win, but.
Right. Cause then you go to
about the referees. It's just not good.
Yeah. Cause then you're going to overtime and then, you know, who knows what happens. And then the other thing, what did you think about that Texas call where he was blocking out, but the guy jumped, so it looked awful. I agree, it looks awful. I do not think that. Do you remember
the intentional foul?
No, not the intentional, but just the Texas guy blocking out. You know, the guy, and he kind of went over his back, and kind of fell to the floor. It looked bad, but I don't think it was as bad as, and they called the foul on, you know, essentially. Too aggressive on the block out, but
and you slow it down. When you slow things down, I think it makes things look worse as well. I mean, right. If we play it fast, I don't know. It just Texas just ran out of gas. I don't know what happened in that game. I needed Texas to win some of my brackets, and they looked in cruise control for 75% of that game, and then it just kind of got away from them. And Texas has got to be kicking themselves for that one, because I think they were the better team and they just kind of let it get away from them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In our Morgan, he asked for a podcast bracket. You had Texas and would have walked away with that. That's everything. All the different bracket things I'm in, everything. Everybody's done. No one has any of these four teams. There's not one. And that's what makes this a little bit anticlimactic as well, is there's going to be a lot of brackets and, you know, champions and winners and everything already crowned before the Final Four even happens. So you're not going to get that casual fan. Hey, I need this team to win so I can win $50 in my pool or whatever.
Yeah, unless you got a UConn fan or one of these fans of these other teams, it's basically over. All the pools I am are essentially done at this point. So, yeah, like you said, anticlimactic, but it's a different Final Four. And, you know, as Zach said last week, this might become the norm. Not every year. There's going to be years where we get the Dukes, UNC, North Carolina, or I should say Kansas, just like we had last year. So those are still going to come up, but I think we're going to get more of these type of years, moving forward.
It'll be interesting because watching this McDonald's All-American game, I think Kentucky has four of these guys coming. And if they can play, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, obviously they'll be the best players in college basketball, but can they compete with the 23-year-olds? We'll see.
Yeah, I saw Joe Lenardi put out his bracket.
I did see that. They're like just craziness and just evil and everything that's wrong. But we're all going to tune in and look and watch. I mean, yeah, I did see that too.
He had Kentucky as a one seed, so obviously he knows the talent's coming.
Yeah, they're the number one, and it's not close. Had listed the top 10, Iowa State's number 8. So it'll be interesting to see. Because that's going to be a big thing for Iowa State. They've been really old lately. And, you know, they've got Blue coming in. And then a top 30 player that just didn't make this cut out of Wisconsin, a 6'8 scorer, which is what they need. But it will be interesting watching them play freshmen compared to third, fourth, fifth year guys. You know, they're more talented, but they are younger, and we'll see. Trev, let's go ahead and let's. I want you to pick your Final Four, your champion. Let's just go ahead and skip who is going to be the champion.
Miami versus Florida Atlantic.
Okay, so you got the battle of South Florida,
and then I'm going to take Miami to win it all.
So you got because I know
everybody else is taking UConn, so I'm taking Miami.
Okay, Zach, what do you got?
Well, UConn's going to win against Miami. And then I think San Diego State is going to beat Florida Atlantic fairly easily. I think that game could get double digits. And I'm going to take San Diego State to win it all. They're going to be the first non-Power 5 since UNLV to win a national title.
Okay. And then, you know, for our podcast listeners, and I know, Zach, I know you know this because we had this today on our chat, and Tassel brought this up. Who is Trevor? This is a good question for you. You may know this, you may not. Who is San Diego State's all-time assist leader?
I got no idea.
This is a good one.
It's very good.
It's Tony Gwynn. He played basketball at San Diego State along with baseball. So one of the best baseball players of all time is also the assist leader in San Diego State history. So there's a good fun fact for you, Trev.
Well, there we go.
And that's what people forget is how good a lot of these players were in other things. You think of Danny Ainge was drafted in 3 things. Dave Winfield was drafted in all 4 major sports after college. Obviously you got Dion and Bo and Brian Jordan and stuff that kind of more of the high profile ones. But, you know, Kenny Lofton played basketball in college, you know. You know, there's a lot of those guys. Yeah.
Julius Peppers played in the Final Four with North Carolina.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, you can, they're all over the place and how good of athletes they are. That's a great fun fact. That's a good bar talk question for you, Trev, to have just in your back pocket.
That'd be a good one.
especially for this weekend.
There we go.
All right. And then so for me, I've got UConn. I'm going more chalk. I've got UConn and San Diego State. And then I've got UConn winning it all. So,
we got 3 different ones though.
Yep.
So Florida Atlantic will probably win it then.
Yep, absolutely. That's the only one that we didn't pick. So,
what are their odds?
I don't know. I saw something where, you know, if you would have bet $100 on having this Final Four, you'd have like $615,000. Well, you're absolutely insane if you're picking this Final Four. You know,
you know nothing about basketball if you pick this Final Four.
Yeah.
No, before the season, you could have maybe picked UConn, or maybe you could have picked Miami just because
Yeah,
I don't know, but the other two teams, no, I don't think. Well, I'll let you guys speak to that, but I don't think there's any way.
No chance.
You might get one of the two, but not both of them.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody's, you know, Florida Atlantic. There was people talking about them, how they could win a game or get into the Sweet 16. But once you get past the Sweet 16 as an 8-9 seed, it's Cinderella City. What is the 8 seed, the lowest seed that's ever won it? Villanova won it in 85 against Georgetown. And then last year, North Carolina as an 8 seed made it, but obviously they didn't win it. So, and I think actually North Carolina made it a time before as an 8 seed and didn't win it either. Maybe with Bill Guthridge right after Dean Smith retired. All right, Trev, let's move on to the NFL. Just a couple topics here. Lamar with a trade request, and then it looks like the Rodgers to the Jets is essentially happened. It just truly has to just get finalized and the details hammered out. Watching ESPN, LaFleur not expecting Love to be Rodgers, appreciations for what Rodgers has done, and then, you know, Woody Johnson, the owner of the Jets, getting ready to welcome in Rodgers. I mean, that's scrolling on the bottom of ESPN.
Yeah, essentially, NFL, nothing's really changed for me. This whole Lamar Jackson requesting a trade, I was kind of already in the mindset that he's, requesting a trade because he's not going to accept a contract. So when this news came out that he's officially requested a trade, a lot of people were freaking out. To me, I was already in that mindset. He's not playing for the Ravens again.
Is there any way he goes back to the Ravens now? Or will he just sit?
Well, he's got his mom as an agent and a buddy as another potential agent. So it's personal now. And he lowballed or whatever Coach Harbaugh during his press conference or his meeting the other day with the tweet. So, no, there's no way that the Ravens are going to bring Lamar back.
All right, and so let me make
that clear. There's no way the Ravens will bring Lamar back. They're done with him.
Yeah, I don't blame him. I agree. I see both sides. You know, he wants his money. He's seeing a Daniel Jones contract. He's seeing, you know, Deshaun Watson get his guaranteed contract. And again, all the owners are just so pissed at the Browns for giving Deshaun Watson that contract because that's what everybody wants now. And you can't blame, but then you can't, you know, blame Lamar Jackson for wanting it. But then you can't blame the Ravens. You know, the way he plays, he's susceptible to injury. He's been injured lately, and they don't want to give him all that guaranteed money in all those years. I really do see both sides of this.
No, I do too. But he's handled it the wrong way. He's gotten bad advice. He's not a bad guy, not a bad player, not a bad teammate by any means, but he's handled it the wrong way. And at this point, if you're the Ravens, if you can get a couple first-round picks for him, let somebody else take on the contract. I shouldn't say it that easily because he wins a lot of games, but he has been hurt the past couple of years, so there is some questions there. I mean, the only player in this league that you can give a fully guaranteed contract to, in my opinion, is Mahomes.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah, I mean, and then next is Burrow.
Yeah, I don't know what Zach thinks about all of it, but I mean, Mahomes is the only guy you can count on. He misses a game or two a year.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the reality of the situation. What do you think, Zach?
Well, where are you thinking Lamar's going to land? Like, I've heard the Colts maybe, but
yep.
I mean, and then who would be the Ravens quarterback?
I think
on the rookies?
I think Lamar goes to the Vikings in exchange for Kirk Cousins and maybe a couple picks.
It's interesting.
It's very interesting.
I don't think it's going to be the normal teams. Atlanta's already said they're out. I kind of believe Atlanta.
They're going with Ritter, right? Didn't they announce him?
Yeah, they have a pretty trustworthy, you know, whatever you want to call it. They have a pretty reliable owner. And he basically came out and said, no, we're going to Ritter. So if I'm looking for a surprise team, I'm going with the Vikings because there's rumors that came out that Kirk Cousins went to them to try to work on his contract, need to renegotiate, I should say. And they basically told him no, which tells me they're looking to move on. Look for the Vikings. they're an NFC team, which helps. You could swap those two, and then whatever, you know, draft compensation or other players need to be mixed in. I think the Vikings are a team to look out for.
That, Trev, that's a team I would have not thought of. But again, you're getting the contracts would be similar because they're paying Cousins all kinds of money too. So that's where that does make a little bit of sense.
I think that makes the Vikings a scary team, in my opinion. I think the NFC's way down, and I think he could come in there and win a lot of games in the NFC. I don't think he'd be scared of too many teams in the NFC.
No, the NFC is weaker than, you know, the AFC. We know that, you know, from top to bottom, at least. Some people brought up the Lions. You know, you could trade Goff to whoever and get a second-round pick at least, and then bring in Lamar and whatever, maybe have a three-way trade. But I think the Vikings are a team to keep an eye on. The Falcons have kind of said they're out. The Texans and the Colts, everyone just assumes the Texans are going to take that next quarterback, whoever is selected first. But the Texans and the Colts have also both been quiet through this draft process, whatever you want to call it. I don't know if either of them are going to be the play for Lamar Jackson, but, you know, I think those two, and then the Vikings.
Awesome. All right. Any other NFL news and notes, Trev, that you would like to talk about?
No, I mean, Aaron Rodgers and the Jets will probably get done. They're just trying to decide on draft compensation. Obviously, the Packers probably want a first-round pick. Mark Murphy and Gutekunst came out and said it doesn't have to be a first. They'll probably take some seconds or some other stuff. There'll probably be some draft picks that are dependent on if Aaron Rodgers returns for a second season and or how far did the Jets go in the regular season, playoffs, Super Bowl. Could be pending on the draft compensation. So other than that, there's some rule changes coming up. We'll get into that here in a couple weeks. The draft, we'll do a couple previews for that probably. But yes, most of the NFL stuff that's already happened, there's no point even really talking about. Like I said, the last episode, you know, if you have a favorite team, you already know who your team signed to let go. You can get on at NFL.com and see all that stuff. We'll do a draft preview. And really, I think the next big thing is, of course, after this week, will be the Masters.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have Zach, you want to join us again next week where we wrap up the NCAA tournament, and then we'll talk about the Masters a little bit?
Yep, I love the Masters, so I'd be all over that.
Yeah, we might even have to do two. Might do one basketball one and then one Masters one. But, yeah, I know you'd be happy to join us for those because two of your favorite things. And anything else you want to talk about or hit on real quick, Zach?
No, I think we hit it. I think, you know, the whole state, maybe the whole country's excited for Friday night to see Caitlin Clark take on basically South Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, it's I agree. I don't know exactly what I'm doing, but I know I'm going to watch that game and cheer on the Hawks and Caitlin Clark. All right, and now I do need to have my bet stamp pick of the week. Okay, and as we talked about earlier, I should have done it right then, but it is Iowa, and we're just gonna do the spread, which is +11.5. Betfred is -106 with that, so we're gonna, you know, use that, and so Betfred -106, +11.5 for the Iowa women over, not to necessarily win over South Carolina, but +11.5. So again, thanks to Bet Stamp. Download the BetStamp app and use a referral code MorganU4 when inside the app. Use it to find the best odds for each game using all the sports books you have. The app also allows you to enter your bets and track your results. If you'd like to follow me, I'll be entering my pick of the week and other bets on the app. So follow Cap3462 to track my bets and follow along how I'm doing. And then, you know, the next thing I kind of want to talk about is, you know, just finishing up here is, I've got a whole box full of koozies that I would love to give away. And so for those of you listeners, and we've tried to do this, but still haven't had too many people do this, you know, rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends, family, get this podcast going a little bit more. We had a good jump here, but we've kind of been stagnant the last, you know, month or so with listeners. and just take that picture of you doing that, take a screenshot of it, and then email it to me at morganyouaskedforpodcast@gmail.com, and then I'll mail you a koozie or two right in the mail there. And then you can have that koozie to show off, you know, outside season. You know, everybody's going to be going to your little kids' games and everything, and it's going to get warmer out. You want to keep that beverage nice and cool.
Morg, make sure to send about 4 to 6, because put them in your golf bag and you're going to lose one of a round typically.
Oh yeah. I just throw a whole bunch in the golf bag. And yeah, you trade, you know, one time you don't have enough. So, you steal it from your buddy and you never give it back. And then the next time he doesn't have one because you stole all of his, and then you just give it back. It's just a round robin on the old koozies in the golf bag.
That's a fact.
And throw a few in the car, because you never know what's going to happen there, going to the casino or whatever. So you got to have that koozies at all time.
Yeah, you could throw 1,000 koozies in your golf bag and they'll be gone. In one season of golf, they'll be gone.
Yeah, that is a fact. So, all right, fellas, thanks a lot. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk again next week.
Have a good night, folks.
Drink up the night, close down the bars, drink up the night.